This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. You know, if you think back to your history class, you probably only remember the names and events of famous men and women, mostly men, who helped shape our country, right? I mean, that's the problem with history. Washington, Franklin, Edison, you remember those names. What about the not-so-famous folks who created businesses, who tilled our farms and just raised our children? These days, history is much more granular and grassroots than we grew up with, perhaps. We like to wonder about those folks, and we want to know more about their lives during that period of this country's history. People like Richard Fitzgerald, who was a man born free in the North. He came to North Carolina to run a brick company. Richard Fitzgerald later worked on many lucrative brick deals. His legacy lives on visually through Durham's cityscape, an exhibit at the Durham History Hub titled Durham Beginnings. 1865 to 1885 shines a light on Richard Fitzgerald and the Fitzgerald name, as well as four other not so well known individuals who helped make Durham what it is. And here to talk about the exhibit are two descendants of Richard Fitzgerald, Stephanie Davis and Ligia Yarborough. Welcome to the State of Things. Good to see both of you.
Thank you.
So, and also with us today on the show is the exhibit's curator, Mary Wilford. Hello, Mary.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, and here to talk about the Durham History Hub's goal is Executive Director Katie Spencer. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Frank.
All of you are here to talk about this remarkable project that, again, tells us about people who have an important impact on our city and whose names we may not know. Stephanie, tell us a little bit about your great-grandfather, Richard Fitzgerald.
The main thing I can tell you is that he had a reputation of being a tough little guy. I remember hearing that from an aunt who was in her 90s, and I went to her one day and asked her to tell me what happened to the money is what the first question I asked her, honestly.
Yeah.
She said, well, she started talking about Jim Crow and things like that, which I didn't know about. I think I was in my early 30s during that time. Mm-hmm. But when she started talking about Richard, she talked about how innovative he was and all of the things he did around Durham. And that was very interesting because I had known some things. I knew he was the president, had been the president of Mechanics and Farmers Bank, but I did not know about the buildings. I attended the church when I was a child, and I did not know about the church until she told me.
That his bricks were.
Those were his bricks, and he donated the land, and he had a lot to do with the AME church in Durham. So, and about St. Joseph, his bricks were what they used to build St. Joseph.
Now known as the Hayti Center, right?
Hayti, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Lydia, he was a man who was reluctant to come to Durham initially. He had to be kind of talked into it, right?
Right, exactly, yeah. His brother talked him into coming down. They heard that there was good business in Durham. So his brother did talk him into coming down.
And he was able to build a thriving and own property down here. This is after the Civil War. It was Jim Crow itself had not been thoroughly established. That happens toward the end of the century. Mm-hmm. But certainly discrimination is an important part of life in Durham at that time. How was he able to do that, to build this business and own property in this new rising city called Durham, North Carolina?
That's a good question. You know, back in those times, you know, being an African-American man, I don't know the answer to that, but that's a wonderful thing that he was able to do that. And one of the things that we did hear that he could pass as a Caucasian, you know, if he wanted to, but his mom did not want them to pass as white people. She wanted them to grow up as black men, which was amazing also, that they could switch, you know, and cross over if they wanted to.
Yeah, and also in Durham at that time, there were white people who helped them. You know, it wasn't the same, like you're saying. It was entirely different mm-hmm. before Jim Crow. And people were willing to let black people get businesses and build and everything.
Well, the Mechanics and Farmers Bank, as you suggest, this is a bank that is very important in financing many of the operations and helps build a black middle class. Mm-hmm. And he was the first president of that. Pauli Murray's uncle.
Yes.
As well.
Yes.
So he's an important figure. So, Lydia, what about your family now? How much do they know about Richard, and how do they keep his name alive within your family?
Stephanie is the root getter of the family. So she makes sure, throughout the year, she, you know, emails the family. She tells everyone about our family history. So I've kind of piggybacked on Stephanie. So we make sure that all the children, our children and their children, our cousins and everybody, they get emails, updates on everything that's going on with our family.
And Stephanie, how important is he to the family when you send these emails, et cetera?
He's very important. They the main thing they want to know is if there are any books about him. And I told them, I said, well, no, I haven't really heard anything about him in too many books. I think there's one book, but they are very interested in Pauli Murray mostly and what's going on with her. So through her, we keep up with everybody else.
And that's, as we say, his niece. Mm-hmm. Mary Wilford, the lead curator of the Durham Beginnings exhibit at the History Hub. Tell us more about the exhibit in general. Richard Fitzgerald is one of the people who's featured. There are others as well, right?
Yes, there's a total of 5 people featured in the exhibit. And, you know, in the beginning, about a year ago, when we were putting this exhibit together and sort of digging through the archives and local stories to decide who to profile, we knew we wanted to get names that maybe had never been on a museum wall before, but we wanted them to have some sort of connection to something people would recognize today. So everybody featured in the exhibit is relatively uncovered by most conventional histories, but we have people like Margaret Fawcett. Margaret Fawcett was born enslaved in Hillsborough, and she worked on a Hillsborough plantation until emancipation. She raised a family. She learned to read. She was a very devout Christian. And she, after emancipation, she moved to Durham and started holding these little prayer meetings right off of Pettigrew Street. Those prayer meetings eventually developed into White Rock Baptist Church, which is still here in Durham today, as are her descendants. And White Rock was an immense cornerstone in the Haiti community in particular. The first library open to African Americans in Durham was established out of White Rock Baptist Church. But, you know, it all began with this one woman, Margaret Fawcett. You're not going to find her in a history book necessarily. So we have her. We also have Abner Jordan, who was born enslaved at Stagville Plantation, which is also a Durham State Historic Site. And after emancipation, he and his family moved to Hillsborough again for a while. A lot of people went from Hillsborough to Durham. The reason they were able to establish a foothold here and the reason that Abner Jordan could support himself in emancipation was because of a lot of the dramatic changes that were going on in Durham at the time. People like Richard Fitzgerald, who were opening factories and employing African-Americans at livable wages in particular.
Well, it's important, and I'm going to stop you right there because there are other interesting people, and I do want to hear about them, but the Hillsborough connection. Hillsborough is the big city. Mm-hmm. It's bigger than Durham, certainly, bigger than Raleigh. Hillsborough is the big city in the area, and Durham is now beginning to take off because of this bright leaf tobacco stuff that these northern soldiers got onto. So, again, if you think about Durham today, and the way it's taking off, and the way it's taking off in part because there are a lot of creative people who live here and there's economic opportunity, but also because it's a progressive place. It's the place people want to live. It's the place where all kinds of different people can mix comfortably. It's taking off in the same way it was doing in the middle of the 19th century.
Exactly.
For some of the same reasons, although tobacco is not such an important part of it. But tell us about some of these other interesting people.
Yeah, so we also have people like John Green, who, while you may not be as familiar with his name, you absolutely know his business, Bull Durham Tobacco. He's the man who really started that, got it off the ground, and W.T. Blackwell was his partner, and he's the man who, you know, really made it a global name. But it all started with John Green, who was a fairly small-scale tobacco farmer and manufacturer before the Civil War. After the war, he came and he built his factory almost exactly where we are right now here at American Tobacco Campus.
And lucky for him, he built it on a street that had his name. So it was really easy for him to find it. That's very cool. Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but and lastly, we have Eliza Bennett Duke, who, while she is connected to, you know, that big Bennett family in Durham and that big Duke family in Durham, her story doesn't necessarily, you know, it's not a story of great wealth and fame. She was a Civil War widow, and after the war, similar to Abner Jordan, there were a lot of positions opening up in Durham so that a woman could come here and support herself and earn a wage and support her family. And because of many of the positions that were opening up in Durham, Eliza Bennett Duke was able to support her 3 children in the city, just her and them working, which is absolutely not something you see a whole lot of before the Civil War.
And how is this going to be exhibited? What do I see? What do I hear? And where do I go to see these stories and hear these stories?
Yeah, so this exhibit is up at the History Hub right now in the downtown Loop. And, you know, it's really a multi-sensory exhibit. We teamed up with some students at North Carolina Central University, and they actually created an exhibit soundtrack. So there's music playing when you come in. The people at Duke Homestead donated some tobacco leaves, so you can literally smell the tobacco when you come in as well. But we have it. It's a very photograph-heavy exhibit. So it is, you know, there is text, but it's very interesting just to look at these photographs of early Durham. A lot of people haven't seen these photos, you know, Durham in the 1870s, 1880s. And you can really see the way it's changed over time.
Katie Spencer, tell us about the History Hub itself, the theory and the way in which the History Hub hopes to present over time the history of this place.
Sure. So we are all about creating connections and building bridges between Durham past and Durham present, between people who have family stories here and people who are just arriving. So connections between the local archives and historians and the general public. So this exhibit, I think, really kind of exemplifies that and what is possible in terms of bringing people together. We know that people connect to history more through family stories than through facts and dates. And so what if you are new to town and you don't have family stories here? How do you connect? And how do you connect to a time period that, you know, we're talking about after the Civil War here? How do you connect? So that was part of the reason we named it Durham Beginnings, because everyone has a Durham beginning they can relate to. And then alongside the exhibit, we did these pop-up museum events where we said, hey, what's your Durham beginning? Come and bring a photo, a memory, a story about when you came to Durham. And then we'll include it in the exhibit. So we have a scrapbook in the exhibit that alongside these stories that go back to the earliest days of Durham, more recent stories of coming to Durham.
And that's part of the theory is that it's going to be a dynamic kind of experience, the hub itself, not just a place where artifacts reside, but this experience that's going to pop up, you know, up and down and have various sensory experiences, including, I guess, His Honor Mayor Bill Bell showed up for one of these.
Brought
himself a picture of himself looking kind of funky in the good old days.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I have a couple of
looking
pages.
At the picture now.
Yeah, I have a couple of pages from the My Durham Beginning scrapbook. So here's Mayor Bill Bell, that's right, telling his Durham story and talking about moving here in 1968, the week that Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated, and sort of seeing the community respond to that and how that was his first impression.
And well, go ahead. Yeah.
Well,
do.
I brought a couple of pages. I have one other one. This is Allison Edwards is a school teacher here in Durham. She was raised in Durham, left and came back. And her Durham's beginning story is about buying their first home in Durham and finding this little note in the house that she bought that says, "Dear newcomers, this is a great house. I think it's awesome. Please take care of it." And so she brought this to the pop-up museum.
It's great stuff. Well, Stephanie and Ligia, if you think about what's going on here, you've known your story. Stephanie, you've tried hard to keep the family together and knowing the story. Now that you hear all the rest, I mean, sort of how do you feel about how your great-grandfather fits into this bigger history? And I don't know, the importance of just telling these small stories or lesser-known stories and how they add up to a bigger picture.
I think everyone should be interested in their past. I think you can learn from it. And I think if you get an idea kind of what they went through and how they struggled and learn from what they struggled with, then we can all kind of work together is what I'm thinking. Because to me, back when Richard did what he did, there were a lot of people helping him. There were a lot of people helping him, and he made it, and he was a success. I think the Durham History Hub is just wonderful. I love it. When I went down there and saw it, I was just amazed. I really was. And to give Richard that honor was just amazing. I appreciate it. I really do.
Well, Mary, it seems to me the daunting thing about curating something like this is, you know, the aspiration to try to tell a story through the stories of people who are lesser known is always noble, but it can be tricky because the stories, they have to be in some ways dramatic, right? I mean, they're going to capture the attention of a public who may not be related to them. How do you approach that challenge?
Well, when we were selecting the five different people to profile, we really wanted to make sure that we got a good representative diversity of the types of people who were moving to Durham at the time. You know, we didn't just want all of these big names, you know, people. We didn't want Washington Duke necessarily because he might be a little harder to relate to than, say, a woman who was middle class and had to move to town to support her family like Eliza Bennett Duke did. And so we tried to pull out details about their lives that people might be able to more easily relate to today. Things like, again, having to support your family, or things like moving to a new place and wanting to find people to worship with, or starting a community, starting a new neighborhood, starting a business. You know, these are the same reasons that people move to Durham today, and these are some of the same things they look for when they come here. And so we really wanted to make the connection that way, that Durham back then and today was thought of as a place where you can come and make a fresh start and really start a community and find people like yourself.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. Mary Wilford is the lead curator of the Durham Beginnings exhibit at the Durham History Hub. Stephanie Davis and Ligia Yarborough are descendants of Richard Fitzgerald. Katie Spencer is the History Hub's executive director. I want to thank you all for being on the program. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
The exhibit is open. It's going to be up until the end of the year, and you can find out all the details at our website, stateofthings.org. State of Things is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michaels. Robin Copley is our technical director. Andrew Tai is the intern. Brent Wolf, WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.